You're listening to a Comics XF podcast. X-Men. Get it!
Hey everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Battle of the Atom. This is your weekly X-Men podcast where we rank every story from A to Z.
I'm Adam.
And I can't hear you.
You can't? Why not?
I now understand that due to the technical difficulties of this podcast, we often do say things like I can't hear you or louder or things like that to each other constantly. And it gets cut out of the show because one of us is a good editor. And I'm the bad boy of X-Men podcast, Zach. Hi, Adam.
So you meant it more in a, you know, you're standing on stage.
Like an MC kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. You want like the, like in the, like, you know.
Let's make some noise. Yeah. Let's do it all for the nookie.
You're going to see Linkin Park in this year of 2024.
Okay, hold on. One, Limp Bizkit. Uh-huh. Two, I also don't like Linkin Park, and people don't like that.
Wait, did I say Linkin Park? I thought I said Limp Bizkit.
You said Linkin Park. You said Linkin
Park. Oh, no. My brain is already malfunctioning on this fine evening. Of course I know the difference. Gosh.
Honestly, here's the thing.
It's a weird...
Linkin Park fans won't want to admit this.
Oh, don't do that.
More... No, hold on. They're more alike than they are dissimilar. They really are.
They both have at least one guy going wicka wicka on a turntable. Like remember when all bands had a wicka wicka guy?
They were very much both part of the rap rock stuff of the early 2000s. And one of them was at Woodstock 98, whenever that was. And the other did a collaboration album with Jay-Z and then was on a lot of Transformers movies.
Yeah.
That was weird, right?
I would say Linkin Park probably had the better run. You know what I mean?
I'm not a Linkin Park fan, and I'd say that Linkin Park had the better run than Limp Bizkit.
Let's hope so.
Limp Bizkit, oddly important to one of the stories that we're going to talk about today.
Well, we are talking about...
That's not a joke! That's not a joke!
We are talking about concerts this week, folks. So all three of our stories will have concerts in them. And this was a Patreon request from who, Zach?
Mike Loughlin. If you want to be like Mike, which is not the, I want to say, Lil Bow Wow movie from the early 2000s.
Like Mike.
Was that Lil Bow Wow?
Yeah. Yeah. And the kid from, isn't it the kid from Jerry Maguire, if I remember correctly?
Yes. Also, do you know who's in Like Mike?
Give me some cast. Give me some cast.
I'm just going to give you the cast that none of us would expect this 2002 movie to have in it.
I'm excited. Here we go.
Jesse Plemons.
Whoa. Okay.
I mean, then it's like Crispin Glover's in it, but that's honestly not that shocking. Eugene Levy's in a bad movie in the early 2000s. That makes sense. And then a lot of basketball players, Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash.
Wow.
Alan Iverson.
Is that Jesse Plemons' first acting role, you think?
I don't think so. He had to have something before then.
Wow. Good for Jesse.
Here's my problem with Jesse Plemons.
You have a problem with Jesse?
My problem with Jesse Plemons is that I was one of the 20 people in the world to watch Friday Night Lights first run, like on actual NBC. Again, no one watched it. It was so bad that the last seasons only happened. Seasons four.
It was on like DirecTV or something, wasn't it?
Yes, it was DirecTV had their own channel that was essentially just Friday Night Lights.
Weird.
No. His first film Varsity Blues? Oh, that's wild.
Wow. Jesse's got those 90s comedy roots. Interesting.
I mean, he was an actor from like being his first film was a movie called Finding North, where his role was, and I quote, hobo.
Oh Jesus. Wow.
Finding North is a 1998 gay-themed independent comedy drama. The DVD cover does have a nude man on it.
Wow.
Just cheeks out.
Okay. Wow. Jesse Plemons starting strong.
You know, it's And good for Jesse Plemons. I love that he's just like an actor now. But
Was he ever not an actor? What are you talking about?
No, because I always think of every actor on Friday Night Lights as just their Friday Night Lights character.
Oh yeah.
And I'm proud of them anytime I see them in something. I'm like, look at you, Tim Riggins, still trying to be a movie star. After Hollywood gave you the biggest push possible and you just didn't get over.
Oof. Yeah. I just, you know, man, I just want you to be aware that those were actors playing characters. You know, they weren't kids playing football.
That's probably why the acting was so good in Friday Night Lights.
Probably.
Then.
Yeah. Just
probably that. Yeah.
Though
it's probably the fact they were actors.
Like Friday Night Lights, you know, when everybody shows up and it's a big crowd for an event, these concerts we're going to talk about this week are just as well attended. So
Right. And if you want to be like Mike, as circle all this back around to the plug we were planning on doing 4 minutes ago,
there you go.
You can go over to patreon.com/battleoftheatom, reach deep down into your heart's pocketbooks, toss a couple of coins into our coffers, and then we'll... Listen, we'll just come up with dumb lists that give us excuses to talk about things that we want to talk about.
This is a great idea. I like this one, you know?
This was fun. It took us a little bit to find three concert stories that we haven't covered.
Yeah, and to make sure they weren't all just like, all just Dazzler or Lila Cheney, you know? So,
well, because we've done a non-zero amount of Dazzler content in the last few weeks. A
lot of Dazzler recently, and we're starting with some Dazzler this week. This is the first story from X-Men Unlimited 32. Dazzler, back in the spotlight. What is this story, Zach?
It's a behind the music story.
Okay. Do listeners know what that is?
Yeah, I was about to say, because behind the music, honestly, was like, I was aware of it when it was on, but it was not television targeted to me as I was growing up. And I know that you have a couple more miles on your engine than I do.
Yeah, my treads are worn down a little bit more. But yeah, you know, especially in the late 90s, early aughts, their VH1 was still a television channel that people had on cable. And they used to do this show called
VH1. Are you talking about that show about Flavor, that whole channel about Flavor Flav's love life?
Eventually, that, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it became. But VH1 used to be like MTV Lite. You know, they used to show more like adult contemporary stuff. And then it turned into the behind the scenes, behind the music channel. So, you know, they used to do these sort of like documentary style looks into the history of a particular artist with a lot of talking heads, not the band, like the idea of people sitting there talking about it. And this
was there a behind the music for the talking heads?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I'm not really, it's not one of those things where I have a full idea of who was studied on the show and who wasn't. You know, I feel like talking heads might have been too obscure for behind the music. You know, they tried to go is there one?
Yeah, they did not have a behind the music. I feel like once you tried to show me a Talking Heads concert film and I fell asleep immediately.
No, I tried to, when we were at C2E2, we were looking for fun stuff to watch and we ended up watching some reruns of, what's that show? What's the vampire show? Taika Waititi,
What We Do in the Shadows?
What We Do in the Shadows. Thank you. I don't know, man, my brain frazzled tonight, but I ended up putting on the Fred Armisen parody of Talking Heads from Documentary Now, which is very, very funny. But I do recall you were very sleepy and did fall asleep while
I also, some of us, you have to understand, did not understand a single reference. I was like, Talking Heads fans, I bet you're digging this and I'm glad it exists for you. But this is like an X-Men 92 style thing, but for them.
Yeah. If nobody had seen Stop Making Sense, which was reissued last year, then the Documentary Now parody probably wouldn't make sense. But that was what was so silly about that show. Anyway, back to behind the music.
It was a wild choice.
This story parodies that style, which is taking different segments of the artist's career and then interspersing it with different interviews of managers and people that were in their orbit. But this also pulls out of the camera and shows you different people from the Marvel universe reacting to the career of Dazzler as it's being told in this style, including the Hulk, who shows up at a bar and really wants to watch this episode.
Which, okay, it's, here's the thing. This is a comedy, quote unquote, story by Will Pfeiffer from 2001, and it's not very funny. Now, here's what I will say.
Yeah.
Jill Thompson draws this in one of her very few Marvel things. That's good.
The art's not bad.
Jill Thompson.
Yeah.
Jill Thompson did a great job on this.
For the humor that Will is trying to get out of this story, I think Jill does a very, very good job in illustrating it. The problem is the jokes don't land.
It's just not, it's a bad script.
He's, you know, forced into, not forced, I guess he chose, I don't know how this story came to be, but he's telling the chronological history of Dazzler from, you know, her earliest appearance all the way through where we're going to end up. You know, as I guess this has a little editor's note that it happens before Uncanny 393. So, okay.
Which would have been Eve of Destruction, which we were talking about right before.
Right, which is where Dazzler finally returns and lets her Jean Grey know that the Mojoverse was taken over by evil X-babies, who are the villains, the X-villains. It's very weird. But there are these like recurring jokes in this, like Nightcrawler's annoyed that he is not listed as part of Dazzler's first appearance. And they're like, oh, you know, blue fuzzy doesn't meet the audience's demographic. And then they make that joke again with about the Beast. And it's like,
okay. However, the first time they make that joke, Wolverine or somebody says that to Kurt. And then immediately the next talking head interview on the documentary is Beast. That's a funny joke right there, because Wolverine's like saying, oh yeah, well, you know, blue and fuzzy doesn't scan, and then Beast shows up. So they really did that one's clever. When they repeat it later involving Beast, I'm like, that doesn't actually work. Now you've kind of ruined your own joke, Will.
Yeah, I mean, they cut to the Fantastic Four and Reed is annoyed that they're watching the show on the Negative Zone viewer, and it's like, is this funny? I mean, I guess it's a kind of a sight gag. Not, there's a real creepy thing about Quasar and how, like, you know, we've talked about the story where what leads up to Dazzler becoming the Herald of Galactus, and Quasar is pretty much like
where she absorbed a dude.
Yeah, absorbs a claw, and you know, Quasar is like admitting to being a kind of a creep, you know, and like, oh, I really just wanted to date her. And I don't know. It's like, this has like a weird early aughts.
You're not
going to
see me defend the honor of Quasar, a guy I don't care about. Quasar, of all of the Marvel cosmic characters that you could try and make popular, there's a reason they haven't even like attempted with Quasar.
No, he's terrible. He's terrible. The best thing he's got going for him is that, you know, Greg Capullo drew a run of his in the 90s. I do appreciate this panel of Odin, who weighs in to let everybody know that Dazzler is the best singer in all of Asgard and Midgard, which pretty great.
I feel like, and Adam, you might know the culture around this time a bit better, but this is what everyone was like, oh yeah, Disco Dazzler, joke, Wizard Magazine kind of punchline, right?
I think so, you know, and
yeah.
I think that's part of what this is like, well, we're going to take this character out of the box for a second and we're going to make fun of her by saying her wacky backstory. But then you get these like weird aside things too. Like there's a Michael Jackson joke at one point and it just does not land. Like, it's like, oh, this is,
well, it doesn't land because it's just kind of a lazy joke.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, I think it's perfectly fine to make jokes about Michael Jackson, who at minimum was an interesting fellow who had a lot of complications in his life and then some legal challenges that we are not going to get into on this.
Oh,
that everyone has seemingly, just as a culture, seemingly we just like don't mention that part anymore.
Yeah, no, I think it's perfectly fine to, you know, realize that he did some things that were pretty terrible. I just don't think here that this works. You know, it's like Michael Jackson with like a gas
mask. It mostly
talks
about how he has a monkey, which was freaking weird.
Yeah.
That's just a weird person thing to have.
Yeah. You know, but like to make him.
Don't they talk about his doctor in this, which is oddly present?
Yes, they do. Because he's requesting some kind of medication.
Which Will Pfeiffer did not mean to make that joke there.
No, but if you were following along with Michael Jackson at that point, that would have made sense. I think the part that really just feels like really obnoxious at the end and really is like, yes, Dazzler is a joke, is that this story ends with Dazzler changing ex-baby Wolverine's diaper while Longshot is like, you know, her husband sitting in a recliner with no shirt on watching this VH1 special. And it's like, okay, like, is it really that funny to make fun of Dazzler? Because I don't think it's actually that funny. You know, like, nothing here made me laugh.
No, that's the thing. It's that comics, for having the word comic in them, humor in comics is actually a very recent trend. Scientists have just figured out how to make that happen consistently. And most of that is really a statistical error associated with the work of Kyle Starks.
There are some great examples of humor in comics. This ain't one of them. There are two other stories in this issue. One of them is a Mike Diodato illustrated Nightcrawler story that
doesn't look like Dio, right? Like,
it's pretty well drawn.
You can see like the spine and the bones, yep, and the skeleton of Diodato in there, but it's not his super stylized stuff that you associate him with now.
It's not super stiff. That's like, he's got a fluidity there that's not there in his later work.
And that's interesting.
There's a Starjammer story, which I didn't know what the heck they were going for there. It's
a John Ostrander story that heads or tails, I can't make of it.
Yeah, it's illustrated by Ian Gibson, and it has a very distinctive visual style, which I'll give it points for, but I just didn't find that to be particularly interesting. You know,
it's like a funny animals style.
Yeah. Yeah. They're working gag strip. They're working for like a Robo Heathcliff. It almost seems like it's very odd. So if I was digging through back issues and trying to pick out an X-Men Unlimited.
Hold on. Wait, this is Ian Gibson's only Marvel work.
Oh,
I bet you. Oh, wait, no, I would assume that Ian Gibson was like he's just a 2000 AD guy.
Oh, okay. That tracks.
Yeah, I mean, he's like almost exclusively a 2000 AD guy.
That makes sense. And what I appreciate about this book is that it is trying to do, there's three very different art styles here. There's three very different kinds of stories. And so the book has evolved beyond its original concept of sort of telling stories between the raindrops and moving into something that's more of an anthology book that allows people to kind of play around in the X universe. But I don't know that these particular stories are really succeeding, you know, especially not the one.
Oh no, it's that bad. Ranking,
which is the Dazzler story.
All right, we can rank them all. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's the Dazzler one's on the cover. The cover is well illustrated and does have the comic book store man from The Simpsons on it. And I think a lot of comic fans get mad about the comic store guy from The Simpsons. And I would just say, if you want to be less mad about that, tell people to own comic stores differently over the last 30 some years. It's really rough when a 30 plus year old stereotype is still the norm.
It sure can be, depending on where you go, right?
Every comic shop I've been to.
Whew. So be more inclusive in your retail spaces. And why don't we try and rank this, Zach, on our big old list?
Oh, that's the bit of the show, isn't it? That we have a big old list. A list that's on the road to 900, wow. Adam. That's right. We're ranking every X-Men story from best to worst. We have ranked 894 stories, and we're not stopping there.
Nope.
The best stories, House of X, Powers of 10. Number 200 on the list is Uncanny X-Men 122, Cry for the Children. That's when Storm discovers drugs are bad. Number 400 is Gizmo's Domino 136. She does.
I know.
That's what happens in that story.
Just laughing. Sorry.
Number 600 is Uncanny X-Men First Class. Number 8, The Leprechaun Murder Mystery. Number 800 is The Brotherhood by X. And 894 is 2099 War of Tomorrow.
All right. Down at 598, we have the Herald of Galactus arc of Dazzler. This is not as good as that.
It's not as good as that.
No.
It's definitely not as good as that.
Down at 615, we have Dazzler 27 and 28. I don't remember what those were. What are those issues?
I think that's a Rogue and Mystique Destiny thing.
then I probably have to give it the edge to that then.
I mean, it's not a good sign. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's one of the ones with the good Billson Cavage covers. And yeah, Rogue's trying to get them. Yeah, actually, that one's way better than this.
It's not better than the third part of X-Men The End. It's 622.
Is this better or worse than Kings of Pain, Adam?
But where is Kings of
Pain? That's at 750. That's at 750.
50? Wow, you went really far down. I think this is better than Kings of Pain. But I know you had a soft spot for that for some reason. I don't remember why.
I just think Kings of Pain is it's doing better than something. That.
You think it's better sometimes than this?
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. This is not better than X-Men Unlimited 37 Sacrificial Worlds, which I don't remember much about, except for it had a lot of Wolverines.
Yeah, yeah, that was better. Even if that wasn't very good. What number is that at?
That is at 727. At 740 is Quest Probe from Marvel Fanfare 33, the video game tie-in to a video game that never came out.
No, that's better than this.
Yeah, it really is.
This
is it better or worse than the Secret Empire stuff from X-Men Blue?
Oh, that's better than this. I honestly think Kings of Pain might be better looking at what's below it on the list. Like,
which one's Unlimited 17? Is that the face-off one?
Yes,
that is the face-off one. The face-off one's better than this.
Yeah, wow, we just keep working our way down. I don't think this is as bad as X-Men and Weapon X Noir at 769 and 770.
I do think it's worse than Wolverine the Vigil, though, which is right above it. And the reason I say that is because Wolverine the Vigil has Wolverine's magical daughter with crystal
clothes. Oh, boy. Good times.
What's her name? Does anyone...
Lauren?
Can anyone tell us her name?
Abigail?
You can't look it up. I think it's... I want to say it's Ren, but I don't know.
Really? I'm not looking this up. All right, so that's our new...
I am. I'm looking it up right now. Marvel Comics Presents Volume... Come on. I want to say 4? Is it?
Sure.
Is it MCP 4?
It's Volume 3.
Is it really only... I guess Volume 1 lasts for freaking ever.
Yep, it sure does.
You're right. It's Volume 3. Hold on, what's her name? Yeah, it's Ren Duren.
Hey, you knew it.
Man, I knew it. I knew.
That brain,
I knew about Ren Duren.
That beautiful brain is just filled with all kinds of nonsense.
Why do I know that? I don't always remember my parents' birthdays.
Ooh, just the next time you're unsure, just call them up and say, look, you know, I do remember Ren Duren's name, but I did forget your birthday. And like, can you
guys, I have to, you have to help me out with, if I commit your birthday to memory, I would have to forget about one of Wolverine's children, and I'm not doing that.
All right, so that's our new very nice 769.
And we've got other stories to talk about though, Adam. Like, what's your favorite band in the world?
My favorite band in the world is Sonic Youth. I love Sonic Youth. What's your favorite band in the world?
It's definitely not underground indie metal band Discord.
Oh, you want to talk about Discord next? I thought we were talking about the other one.
No, but we can use your Sonic Youth bit later because it'll be oddly relevant also.
All right, so let's go to Discord.
not the social media chat room.
No, that's not what this is. It's not that app, you know, for video gamers and other people that want their own private, you know, thingy. But
I don't even think it's for video games anymore, primarily. I think it's for me and my friends sending each other the worst pictures we can find.
It really did throw me for a loop when I realized that the Discord icon was a video game controller. I didn't clock that for a solid year, I feel like. Because I was like, oh, this is for gamers. Oh, okay. Okay, so who is Discord? Because Discord is like a band that I don't think I've ever seen in any other comics. I've only ever seen them here in this arc of New Mutants.
Yeah, because they only exist in New Mutants 33 to 36. I mean, or it's part of the Regenesis era. Do you remember Regenesis, Adam?
Yeah, this is post-Schism. So we've got Wolverine heading over to the Jean Grey school. Cyclops is still doing his thing. But this is the arc where a small group of New Mutants decides to just set up shop in a house and just be people. So we've got Dan Abnett.
I mean, let's be let's be fair to them, though.
Yeah.
Their alternatives were Utopia, which was not a great place to live, or they can go live on High Street in San Francisco. It's a pretty easy, and Sunspot's rich, so they don't have to worry about rent.
That is true, though he is apparently not allowed to use his wealth as part of this task. I thought that was strange because clearly it's not like he's not going to use his money.
Listen, this and the entirety of Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning's time on New Mutants is all about not the journey. It's about the destination. They have a destination in mind of we need to bring back this obscure plot point and do something with it. It happens every single freaking one of their arcs. Literally, the team's goal at this point is Cyclops is having them tie up loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
The part of me that likes that one of those loose ends is figuring out what the deal with X-Men is, thinks it's funny. The part of me that likes reading good comics.
Less so.
He doesn't love it so much. So much.
Well, so this is the arc that starts that off. It's David Lopez doing the art with who's doing the inks here? Alvaro Lopez. And the team at this point is Mirage, Cypher, Magma, Sunspot, X-Man, and Warlock, which is a pretty weird group, you know, considering X-Man is in the mix. It's like, it's weird.
It's not a weird group except that Nate Gray's there.
Yeah.
It's a very normal New Mutants group. And then also Nate Gray, who doesn't really have his powers.
No, he does not have his TK.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, Adam, it's been so long. Beep, 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 it's an X-Man update.
It sure is.
X-Man's still around, guys. I don't know what to tell you. He's not good in this comic. Though he does have one of my favorite lines,
where he
tells an old lady that he's not moving. He just really likes lifting up bodies.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. He is still unbuttoning to show off his ex-chest tattoo.
Love that he doesn't wear a shirt. It's like, if I have one criticism of the Age of X-Man, mm-hmm. it's that he only wore a navel-length deep V. Mm. And did not fully expose his chest at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. Needed a little bit more. Needed.
Just, folks, if you want to hear more about me being embarrassed about talking about Nate Gray shirtless, you can go listen to the episode of Cerebro I was on where Connor had to explain a part of the male anatomy to me.
Oh,
And what some common slang terms for that were.
I know exactly what you're
talking about. I was unaware of that.
Yeah.
Until that podcast.
Listen, you learn something every time you listen to Cerebro, you know?
Every time.
So you were mentioning that Cyclops is sending them on some, you know, take out the trash chore kind of assignments. And this one is, what the heck happened to Blink? Where is Blink? What's going on? And
so we have to be so clear about
the which Blink. Which Blink?
This is the Blink from Phalanx Covenant who died and then got pulled back by Selene in Necrotia and did evil things. And now she's trying to right those wrongs. And here's the problem, Adam.
There's a problem? What's the problem?
Well, my problem is that Blink is not a character, so I don't care about her redemption arc. And she also doesn't feel like being driven by anything except for, I shouldn't have almost destroyed the world.
Blink is one of those characters who is much more of a character design than an actual character. That is for sure. I feel like she gets at least some good screen time here because what she's doing over the course of these issues is trying to track down the source of these very strange natural disasters that are taking place all over the California area. And she has actually figured out that the origin of this is a metal band known as Discord. And Discord is creating these storms somehow. And the reason that they are creating these storms is I thought it was kind of fun because there's a reason. It's not just their music that's causing, you know, tornadoes and lightning storms and eventual earthquakes.
Right, right, right.
It's basically because they've summoned some interdimensional demon or something. What's going on here, Zach?
It's like an alien demon thing.
Yes.
But that's what it is. It's an alien demon thing. I want to say that it comes back later in this run, but I honestly don't remember.
Huh.
There's a, maybe, I don't know. It's, there's a whole thing with like Doug. There's a Doug story at the end of this run that goes on for too long and is not good enough to justify how long it lasts.
Well, Doug is the one that does discover the alien in a box, which lives on Discord's tour bus, and looks inside. And it is a very kind of, what's that Capcom Doctor Strange thing with the eyeball and the tentacles? Shumagorath. It kind of looks like that, like more eyeballs, more tentacles.
Yeah, it just looks like a Lovecraft thing.
Yeah, it's just like, stuff it's in like a box, but it really messes Doug up. Like, he's like, oh man, I have looked upon the demon of, you know, like incomprehensible horrors. So they realize that, you know, basically if they can launch this thing into space, then they don't have to worry about it anymore. And Discord will stop actually causing terrible, terrible things to happen here on Earth.
You know, it was an interesting time. This book came out in 2011 and metal was having a moment.
Sure.
There was, I don't want to say a full revival of it, 'cause I don't think that happened, but it was at least more present in pop culture. You had TV shows like Metalocalypse. You had the tail end of games like Rock Band and Guitar Hero. Mm-hmm. You had the video game, what's it called? It had Jack Black in it.
Wait, this is a video game?
Yeah. It was
Tenacious D?
No. Jack Black metal video game. It's by the friggin' people who did like Psychonauts.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's Brutal Legend.
Okay.
Yeah, that had just come out like a couple years earlier. Brutal Legend was great. It was a Tim Schafer game. Jack Black plays one of the voices of the characters, and they also have a great cast like Rob Halford from Judas Priest is there. I want to say if Lemmy isn't, I think Lemmy is in it. Tim Curry's in it. Like, who's all the voice? Yeah, Lita Ford's in there. Ozzy Osbourne's in it. No, Lemmy's not in it, but the guy just does look like Lemmy. No, wait, yeah, he plays the Killmeister.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I've never heard of this thing before. I'm just like following along.
Okay, so it's Ronnie James Dio was going to be in it, but he died too soon before production. So Tim Curry took his spot, which is sad. But
if you're going to get somebody, get Tim Curry. Go for it.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I was saying. Metal was having like a bit of a like cultural thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I can see why they were playing with this.
No, I mean, I'm looking at some of the top metal albums of 2011 and like, I remember really enjoying like Wolves in the Throne Room and what else is on here? Blut aus Nord. I remember Sun O was making like a pretty big dent in things at that point. So I almost, when I'm reading this, I was kind of putting my own listening onto it. You know, I was kind of imagining Discord as being, I don't know, more of like a death metal or a doom metal band.
They've got like a Nordic, like satanic metal band vibe.
They do, like know. They're wearing kind of masks and big muscular guys, but there is, you know, it's not just, it's two guys and a lady, which I appreciated, you know, it's not just,
I appreciate it too, but I mean, listen, I've also like, I've seen metal bands and I know what metal bands were like in 2011. Like, I'm not saying it was right. I'm just saying that that was an inaccurate depiction of the scene of the bands that were popular at that time.
That is probably true. In this case, though, I really just appreciated that, like, their metal, their rocking out was, like, just really causing chaos. And I thought that was kind of a fun premise.
I like the premise. I like the high concept. I don't like the execution because it just kind of doesn't go anywhere. It's like, they have to find Blink. They find Blink. They have to stop this band. They stop the band.
Mm-hmm.
There is no real conflict in this story.
Well, I think it would be more fun if the band actually had powers and were actually supervillains. They're not, though. They're just a metal band that stumbled onto this like alien entity and are accidentally causing this. So it's much easier to solve that way. They never have to fight Discord, which I think would be more fun.
Also, I'm going to be honest. Everyone's like, oh, look at these metal people. They're tough. Oh, are you so tough? you're so tough. You're going to go up there and play your little instruments and sing your little songs like a good band kid. You're so tough. You're a big, tough boy. You're a big, tough boy.
I don't know. These Discord guys, they got big muscles. I wouldn't fight them.
Here's the thing about metal. And I say this as a big Judas Priest fan. Do you know why metal people look that way? Because Rob Halford was gay as hell.
Okay.
Rob Halford is gay as hell. And he was like, I'm into the leather scene.
Sure.
We're going to make that our band's look. And then everyone copied them for 40 plus years as leather daddies. Like, this is not even like a coincidental, like, co-development. This was very explicitly just what Rob Halford was into. And I love that for Rob. Always laugh when people are like, oh, look at me, big, tough, burly metal guy. And most of them are the same people that would likely make fun of people for being gay.
I don't know.
They're like, oh, look at that. I
would hope not.
It's a whole thing.
But, you know.
I'm not saying that Discord is a homophobic band.
We don't know anything about Discord either. I think it would be fun to know a little bit more about them, aside from the fact that they're just these three rockers causing chaos. You know?
Yeah, because that's all it is. Yeah. Like that. There's not a lot of story here. That's the problem.
No, I will say, do really enjoy David Lopez's art here. I think he's doing a really good job.
With one exception.
All right, let's get into it. I'm assuming you're talking about his Warlock, right?
David Lopez can't draw Warlock.
His Warlock is kind of like a claymation worm with like a little smile on it. And it's, man, it's not a good look for Warlock.
I love David Lopez generally.
Oh, sure.
Can't draw Warlock.
No, it's okay.
Dude, cannot.
It's okay.
Maybe if he tried again, he's like, okay, look, that model obviously didn't work.
Yeah.
Let me do something else.
Yeah, you can't make Warlock where he just looks like he's kind of made of Play-Doh, you know? Like, he can't be a tube of cookie dough. He needs to actually
He's like a stick bug.
Yeah, and he needs to be like sharp angles and scribbly. But I don't know. Other than that, love David Lopez's artwork here. I think it's fantastic. Why don't we try and rank this? You know, we've kind of waxed poetic about Discord's chaos here, but we have some other Volume 3 New Mutant stuff on the list, don't we?
We do. We have, I just went back to that. Hold on. No Mutant. Oh,
like this is better than Date with the Devil, which comes immediately after it, I feel like.
You feel like this is better than Date with the Devil?
I mean, I didn't love that issue, you know? I thought this was
I didn't love it because she was dating actual Satan.
Yeah.
And it was just like it. I didn't love it for Marvel Comics reasons more than anything else.
But I think we're in the right realm. Like this is a 500 story, probably.
It's a 500s. This has 500s written all over it. Like, I don't think this is better than X-Force Sex and Violence, which, while an incomprehensible and stupid story, I like the art in a lot.
Yeah, where is Sex and Violence? That's at 535.
That's at 535.
All right, so this is probably somewhere in between here then. It's not better than Adam, Claws and
right
Webs.
Right above it. Yeah, that's the thing. Right above it is Claws and Webs.
Yeah. So
the Sam Keith drawn one with Venom and Wolverine.
This is probably our new 540 then.
It's probably our new 540. We'll just put it right above the.
All right, perfect. All right, so this is New Mutants Volume 3, 33 to 36, Discord. And we've got one more concert to attend, and it is Lollapalooza.
So help me, Jesus. It's a good show that's coming on. This is X-Men 92, 6 through 10. Written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims, with pencils mostly by Altai Fermentsaya, with Corey Hamisher filling in a little bit there right at the end. We had Chris Sims on the show back years ago, right after this had wrapped up.
Yep.
We talked about this, and he's been open with the fact that, yeah, you can pretty much see where near the end of issue 8 we found out we were getting canceled.
It's very clear.
It's very clear what happened.
Yep. God.
Which is a shame, because everything about the Lollapalooza parts of this are a hoot.
Oh, Zach, I am on the record here. I love this book. And, you know, we've got some really great David Nakayama covers in the mix here. you know,
friend of the show, David Akiyama, right there, baby.
Yeah, we
DNA, let's go.
We have, you know, some guest star artists, including the Flaming Lips, the Toadies, and of course, we have Lila.
Who's, I gotta ask you, because I know you're more of a child of the 90s.
Yes.
Did the Toadies ever have any more than that one song?
No, the Toadies were 100% a one-hit wonder, and it actually was interesting. I did a double take when they're singing that song.
Possum Kingdom.
Possum Kingdom, because I remember when that song came out, like, I was like, oh, well, this is a song about a guy taking a woman behind a shed to kill her. And it's weird seeing Lila Cheney,
gleefully
sing this. However, did a little bit of, you know, just like going back to the lyrics, and I found that the band actually said that the song is a sequel to another song they wrote that actually kind of implies that he's trying to turn her into like a vampire type creature, because it actually works in the story then, because the very next thing you see is Jubilee watching from home, who spent the first arc of this as a vamp turned into a vampire after the Alpha Red stuff and the Darkhold stuff. So I was like, okay, that makes more sense. But yes, they really only had that one song as a hit.
Possum Kingdom friggin' rips though. That song's the banger from tip to toe.
It's one of those, you know, it's still bizarre to me that there was an era of time where guitar driven rock was like all over top 40 radio. I never know how to explain this to my teenage kid, because she's like, what are you talking about? Why would this be on the radio? And I'm like, I don't know.
Because it ruled.
I don't know.
Because it was great.
I know, but it is
be
odd.
My angel.
It is weird, though, like to even think that that could ever happen again. I don't think it could.
It could never happen again.
History's a flat
line. We are past the golden eras, and we shall never see their like again.
Yeah.
Also, the Flaming Lips are here. I'm not a Flaming Lips. I feel like you have to either be a Flaming Lips guy or not.
No, not my thing.
I'm just not. Nothing against them. It's just like,
no, they're talented. I just, they never did anything for me. But clearly, these are bands that Chris and Chad like and wound their ways into here because it's the actual guys.
Fun fact, no.
No?
Well, I mean, I don't know Chris Sims or Chad Bauer's opinions on the Flaming Lips or the Toadies, except for now I'm thinking they probably like, yeah, they were in our comic. We like that. Here's what happened.
Ooh, I want to hear this story.
This has been corroborated different places, but essentially they pitched the idea of doing Lollapalooza. And if you look at the title page, it has a bunch of like every Marvel related artist that they can think of
is on
that page. Yep. As well as the Toadies and the Flaming Lips. And they had the idea of like, let's do like a 90s thing. And they were like, yeah, it would be great if we could like, it's a parody band. Like some heck. I don't know if it was their idea or Jordan White, who editor on the book, his idea was like, well, let's see what we can get. And I think the story I heard goes that he calls them back like a day later and says, so we can get you the Flaming Lips and the Toadies. It's just like Marvel was like, let's just call around, see who will just give us their likeness rights real quick for this comic book.
You know what? It's not like the Flaming Lips are like some small outfit. Like they're a pretty big band. So it's kind of fun that they lent themselves to this. But it is funny to see the opening page and it's like the Skrull Beatles and, you know, making fun of Rick Jones. Like that's fun. Like, I appreciate this book so much because it does exactly what I want to do if I ever, you know, got a chance to write this, is let's have some fun. You know, let's do some silly stuff. Let's
really
go in.
You, the creative mastermind behind Bish and Jubes, a comic that has Grimlock from the Transformers combined with Warlock from the New Mutants to become Locklock?
Guilty as charged.
People, if you haven't read Bish and Jubes in a while, I was thinking about this. I texted Adam because I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, Adam, this was a good comic you did. You remember that? You remember how you did a good one?
I got to make some more comics at some point.
You got to make some more comics, man. I love them.
But great example for, you know, the first issue is number 6. Who shows up? It's Deathshead. Deathshead's here, you know?
Yes.
Deathshead, yes.
That's because Chris and Chad like Deathshead.
Of course they do.
I can tell you that. And here's the challenge. Those first couple of issues are a lot of fun. Even if they lean into like there's a bunch of Brood stuff that I think is starting to go somewhere, but doesn't get that place because it is a series of escalation. And there seems like there is supposed to be a different story between Death's Head, the Brood, Sword, because Abigail Brand 92 is here.
Yes.
And the Shi'ar Imperial Guard that literally gets shuffled off screen and right at the start of issue 9.
Yeah.
It's like, and we're dealing with this somewhere else. And that's an issue.
It has to, because they only have now 2 issues, 9 and 10, to wrap up the book, which is their big Apocalypse the 12 story, which clearly was supposed to be like an entire arc.
It was supposed to be like a 25 issue run.
Oh, really?
That they had plotted out.
Okay.
Okay, but hold on. Think about it. That's not that crazy for a book with the word X-Men on it. And B, like, just like what Marvel Comics in 2016 were doing, you could get a 20-issue story.
Sure.
That wasn't that crazy.
No, what I do appreciate is that, you know, knowing they've got some limited runway here, they're squeezing in as much as they can, you know? Like,
some would argue too much.
I'm not arguing that at all, but the fact that, you know, we get this really great Adam X cameo as part of this story is great to me.
Okay, because here's what happens at Lollapalooza. X-Factor is there as like security and stuff. But at the same time, there's a handful of mutants like Adam X the Extreme and Random and Maggot and Marrow.
Love it.
Who are like, actually, screw you guys. You're cops.
Yep.
And then they get into a big fight. And that's fun. They're like, no, we're gonna break stuff. That's the thing, because Adam X is very aggressively Limp Bizkit in this, in a way that Adam X wasn't in the Fabian Ieyasa comics. Then at the same time, I don't care that he wasn't like that in the Fabian Ieyasa comics, because Adam X has always been like that in all of our hearts.
That's right. And it's great to see him really talking about how everybody needs to be extreme, you know, and just a great version of the character.
The Extreme is so good. I love him.
If you use him correctly.
I love him.
You know, I think that...
Now, no one's done that before, but it has to happen someday.
Yeah. I also think it is interesting to me that we're years away from the Apocalypse retcon of Krakoa, and yet we have a story here that does involve Apocalypse saying that all of his antics were in service of a greater global cause to defeat a celestial named Exodus. But I just think it's interesting because in 9, he shows up with all of the villains, the upstarts, the acolytes, Mystique, Bastion, Joseph is here as the new Magneto, and everybody has to team up to go beat this celestial, which does not happen.
All 12 of them, his 12 disciples.
Yes, his 12.
Again, like in practice, this doesn't work as well as it could have. I wish that there's 2 stories here, and I wish they both had space to breathe.
I do too.
Because I think they're both great pitches that structurally getting forced together weakens both of them. Because Lollapalooza kind of fizzles out and then it immediately goes into this story and they don't get the big JLA WW3, you know, everyone has powers moment that they want. Like, it doesn't have the impact that they were going for. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because the story doesn't really end. You know, the Celestial does appear on the second to last page, and the last page is an outstanding splash page by Alti, where everybody is sort of being telekinetically launched into space, including people like...
Because they all got powers.
Everybody
they
has
all
powers.
Got powers from the Darkhold,
right?
From the start of the thing.
Yeah.
Again, they were going to tie it all together. They were going to make it good, and then they had to hit the fast forward button on it.
It's okay. You know, I do appreciate
you say it ended early. I do feel like 100% their goal was we have to get to that last page of everybody is fighting for a world that hates and fears them.
Yes.
Like everyone's together in it.
Yeah. Including JDW. Jordan does get if you look down in the bottom right of that fun splash page, he's there with his ukulele.
Adam, it's everybody. Like it's, Alti's on it. Heather Antos, who was the editor on this, Chris and Chad are in that. Like, it's a good page. Also,
it's great.
Also, in the middle of all of this, Scott Summers and Jean Grey come back from Training the X-Men of 2099.
Yes.
A story that was supposed to happen like in between arcs, and they got one of those in.
Yeah, because the that last we had seen them was issue 5, and then they have to bring them back in issue 10. So a lot of rushed pushing the pieces together. But man, I do wish this had more time to breathe, because I really enjoyed the book. I loved the sense of humor. I loved how silly it was. And it was just great to see them playing with the toys in the toy box. I thought they did a good job.
It's hard not to compare this at this moment to X-Men 97, right?
Well, because it's a very different product. You know, X-Men 92 is coming out of the established reality from the Secret Wars battle zone. So
okay, yes, but there are
things like, you know,
it was only barely legally distinct from the animated series.
Yeah,
and we all
know. No, and they're playing up on that, and Alti is, you know, using a style that's very cartoony and animated in the way that, you know, kind of looks back to the original series, whereas, you know, the current cartoon is doing the greatest hits and I think a fun way, but it's a very different thing than being given the, what's that? You mumbled
something. I was going to say, I did watch the Madeline Pryor episode.
Oh yeah.
That was weird. That was a weird episode of, that was a weird 30 minutes of television. Why are the episodes 30 minutes? Why are they not 22 minutes?
Hey, I don't know. But wait till you get till this week's, when it's combining a Mojoverse and story and life death into one. That's an interesting episode.
They fell into the Mojo trap. We've talked about the Mojo trap. Everyone thinks they can do a good Mojo story.
It's not bad. I actually enjoyed it. I just don't think that I don't like the voice of Mojo. That's my only complaint. I think they miscast that voice. That's not what Mojo sounds like to me.
I need to look this up now, because I'm concerned about how you could make Mojo's voice wrong.
Just listen. I would like to hear your reaction to how he is cast.
I want to do this very soon. I may go lay in my bed and watch this, because my kids do not care about dad's stuff.
I love that.
X-Men's dad's thing. And it's like, yeah, they know about it. Yeah, they'll be like, oh, this is interesting, kind of. But they're not going to sit down and be like, no, guys, you have to understand. That's Madeline Pryor. Dad, what do you mean? Well, she's a clone of Jean Grey. What do you mean? Well, she has a baby. What do you mean there's a baby involved? What are you talking about? Oh, that's Mr. Sinister. Yeah, that's Mr. Sinister. You guys want to know his whole deal? No? Great. Me either. And frankly, I want to know it less and less some days. Let me tell you about Orbis Stellaris now, boys.
Hey, kids. Would you like to learn about the entity? How about Black Womb?
No one. Again, and I was very kind to Cerebro earlier on this episode. No one should freaking care about the Black Wound, and it's an absolute shame that a popular podcast has convinced some of you that Black Womb is good or interesting.
I don't know. I don't need to worry about that, especially not for this. I think a better comparison is not the actual show, but the Steve Fox, Todd, it's not, who's the illustrator? It's not Todd Knock.
It's not Todd Knock.
I'm blanking on
the 97.
But the new X-Men 97 book, which is under, it has to exist within the reality of that cartoon, as opposed to Chad and Chris can kind of do whatever the heck they want here. And it,
well, because here's what they do. Here's what they do in this, which I love. In their first arc is, let's do E is for Extinction, but the cartoon version.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then it's, let's do Curse of the Mutants, mm-hmm. but good.
Yeah. Yep.
Like that's their ideas are, let's do something weird and dumb from X-Men continuity. Let's have Death's Head 92 and Sword 92 show up. Let's do the 12.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like,
let's do a spin on something that's fun, you know, and it's not.
I wish that Madeline Pryor episode was less slavishly devoted to hitting all of the high points of like the comic side of it. And then just be like, what if it was just a weird demon episode?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all it was, and it didn't try and be everything. Like, make it an adaptation of the ideas, not just pulling from the page.
Well, I mean, if you go back to the original series, that's kind of I mean, it was a mix of here we're adapting the original stories, but we're also going to take some liberties here and there. You know, so it's kind of holding true to that. I don't know. I don't want to make this too much about the new cartoon.
I don't want
to
make it about that. I don't care.
I loved this series, and
I love this series.
Wish there was more of
this. I have a page. I have a page.
Oh yeah,
the Scott Coblis page is right over there.
Yeah,
I got it for under $100 too. I weaseled my way out of that one.
Oh my goodness!
It wasn't from Scott. It was from a third party dealer. I would never haggle with the direct artist, but that ship had already sailed. I don't care about a third party dealer.
Now we have the original Battle World arc of X-Men 92 at 90. That is pretty high.
It's not as good as that.
I don't think this is, if only because it really does lack an ending. But I think we have the first arc of X-Men 92 pretty high too. Where are you?
We absolutely have The World is a Vampire. We have to. It's at 94.
Oh.
It's right there.
Okay. It's at 94. It's still top 100. I don't
know. This is worse than both of those.
Yeah, probably.
A good margin.
But I still enjoy it so much. Like, I want to say, is this a top two? Is this like in the 100s?
No, it's not in the 100s. And here's why I'm going to say that. Yeah, you have highlighted Cry for the Children. Cry for the Children is an objectively better story, and we would both agree on that.
Is it in the
giant size Little Marvel AVX is at 214, and I think that is also better than this.
Yeah, I would agree.
For like a similar vibe, it's better than it. But
I think we might be in the 200s, though. Like, as I'm looking through,
the 200s. I think we're in the 200s. Like, this is probably just about as good as like Nightcrawler's Inferno or the Power Pack Thanksgiving issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're in the same. That Power Pack issue is a good comparison, you know? Lots of guest stars, really kind of fun, though that had a somber tone to it with the...
The Power Pack one's probably better, though, now that I say this out loud. But 264 is X-Men the manga 1-4, which is Night of the Sentinels.
I think this is more creative than that, even though I really do enjoy X-Men the manga.
I'm going to say, this is not better than the Maggot origin issue, Anatomy of a Monster.
Okay, well, that's a good place to put it then. This is going to be our new 264.
Wait.
No?
Hold on. That's not the Maggot origin issue. Is that the Rutai? 75. X-Men 75.
Why would a Rutai story be that high on our list?
That's what's confusing
me. There's no way. Hold on. This is X-Men volume.
Nope. That's the Rutai story. Okay, never mind. Put it between that and the Gold Balls issue. Yeah, that's the Ascension of Pilgrim, my man.
Why the heck is that so high? That seems wrong.
We really like the Kelly era.
Yeah, maybe there was something special about that. I don't know. All right, so this is going to be our new...
That doesn't make
I love
sense.
When we confuse ourselves. This is our new 263 X-Men 92, 6 through 10. A Lila
Palooza. Can I make one more comment about X-Men 97?
Yeah, please.
They did my boy Gold Balls dirty by making fun of him.
Wait.
In the first episode, they make fun of Gold Balls, and that makes me sad.
They made fun of Gold Balls in X-Men 90? When?
Yes. Danger Room Jubilee makes fun of the idea of a mutant having... Well, your mutant powers aren't dumb, Sunspot. You could be like making gold balls everywhere, and I'm like, they're eggs.
That's true. I forgot
plebeian, that she did they're that. Eggs.
Oh, sorry, Zach. Jeez.
It hit me in my heart.
It's one of those.
I'm like, you didn't have... Gold Balls is dumb, but he's still a person. I love him.
Sorry,
he's
buddy.
Fictional. I understand this.
It's okay. Well,
he's my man.
Yeah.
Adam, I'm sorry. Let's finish up this podcast.
Okay. Do we thank our patron? Let's thank our patron.
We should thank our patron. Mike, thank you for this concert one. It was great. I haven't been to a concert in like a year because I'm old and tired. And the idea of driving somewhere for a concert is honestly exhausting.
I haven't been since last summer. I guess I went with friend of the show, Christy Edelman, to see Carly Rae Jepsen. That was the last concert
I went to.
I haven't been to one since.
I saw Buddy Guy last year.
Great. Nice.
It was great. I enjoyed it. He was very old.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, he played well, but he was like, I'm 80 something.
Yeah.
It's late.
Yeah. Yep. Support the show, put in requests, all that jazz. Folks, if you want to follow me on social, Adam Reck on Blue Sky and Instagram, Arthur Stacey on Twitter, and Zach, what are we doing next week?
Next week, we're taking the week off because we're busy. We've got stuff going on.
Right. But when we come back, what can people expect? Do we want to tell them anything?
We're doing a Malice episode.
That's right.
I don't know. Why should we keep it secret? We're doing a Malice episode. But One of those stories is going to be our 900th story.
Oh, wow.
Don't you want to know which one that is?
Ooh, exciting stuff. On the frontier.
Until then, folks, this has been Bally Adam. Hope you survive the experience. Get it!